Blog Talk Radio.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Mr. Speaker, here's the latest reality game. Let's play Wall Street bailout. Rule one, rush the decision. Time the game to fall in the week before Congress is set to adjourn and just 6 weeks before an historic election so your opponents will be preoccupied, pressured, distracted, and in a hurry. Rule two, disarm the public through fear. Warn that the entire global financial system will collapse and the world will fall into another Great Depression. Control the media enough to ensure that the public will not notice that this bailout will indebt them for generations, taking them from trillions of dollars, taking from them trillions of dollars they earned and deserve to keep. Rule three, control the playing field and set the rules. Hide from the public and most of the Congress just who is arranging this deal. Communicate with the public through leaks to media insiders. Limit any open congressional hearing. Communicate with Congress via private teleconferencing calls. Heighten political anxiety by contacting each political party separately. Treat members of Congress condescendingly, telling them that the matter is so complex that they must rely on those few insiders who really do know what's going on. Rule four, divert attention and keep people confused. Manage the news cycle so Congress and the public have no time to examine who destroyed the prudent banking system that served America so well for 60 years after the financial meltdown of the 1920s. Rule 5. Always keep in mind the goal is to privatize gains to a few and socialize losses to the many. For 30 years in one financial scandal after another, Wall Street game masters have kept billions of dollars of their gains and shifted their losses to American taxpayers. Once this bailout is in place, the greed game will begin again. But I have a counter game. It's called Wall Street Reckoning. Congress shouldn't go home to campaign. It should put America's accounts in order. To Wall Street insiders, it says no on behalf of the American people. You have perpetrated the greatest financial crime ever on this American republic. You think you can get by with it because you are extraordinarily wealthy and the largest contributors to both presidential and congressional campaigns in both major parties. But you are about to be brought under firm control. First, America doesn't need to bail you out. It needs to secure the real assets and property, not your paper. That means the homes and properties of hardworking Americans who are about to lose their homes because of your mortgage greed. There should be a new job for regional Federal Reserve banks. We want no home foreclosed if a serious workout agreement can be put into place. And if you don't do it, we want a notarized statement by a Federal Reserve official that they tried and failed. Second, Taxpayers should directly gain any equity benefits that may flow from this historic bailout. We want the American people to get first priority in taking ownership of the institutions that want to pass their toxic paper on to the taxpayers. Third, before any bailouts for Wall Street, America needs major job creation to rebuild our national infrastructure. America needs assets, not paper. We need working assets. Fourth, the time for real financial regulatory change is now, not next year. A modernized Glass-Steagall Act must be put in place. We need to reestablish locally owned community savings banks across this country and create within the Justice Department a fully funded unit to prosecute every single high-flying thief whose fraud and criminal acts created this debacle and then forced their disgorgement of assets going back 15 years. Fifth, any refinancing must return a major share of profits to a new Social Security and Medicare lockbox where the money can go to pay for a dignified and assured retirement for every American. This member isn't voting for a penny of it. Those who created and profited from this game of gains must be brought to justice. The assets they stole must be returned to the American taxpayers right down to the tires on their Mercedes. Mr. Speaker, I ask my colleagues to join me in co-sponsoring my bill to create an independent commission to investigate these well-heeled wrongdoers. Real reform now or nothing.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go out?
You've got to get mad.
67. I know it was to Louisville and Atlanta.
We're not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chair, open the window, stick your head out and yell, and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. And are you mad as hell? I hope that you are. And I hope that you're ready to throw open that window and scream out that I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, we've talked for a few years now on this program and on the Patriot Family's website. I had a great conversation or exchange today with a liberal atheist. And I don't have anything personal against liberals or atheists for that matter, or liberal atheists. The conversation was about unalienable rights. What are they? What are unalienable rights? What are rights? Where do they come from? Where do rights get their power? Now, the gentleman proceeded to attempt to persuade me that rights, while they are self-evident and not granted by government, the power, ladies and gentlemen, of your individual rights rest within the law. The defined meaning under the law of your rights and the ability to adjudicate those meanings under the law. That's what he believes. Now, I understand this in part because he doesn't believe in God. And so the only thing in his mind that can be greater than the individual, the collective, government. And of course the law is written to restrain both the individual and government. And in this way, you see, we have this harmonious relationship. So my question was, what court did the founding fathers and the framers of our founding documents, what court did they plead their case to for the separation of the colonies from the British Crown? What law did they use? And in what venue was this case adjudicated under the law for this remedy that the law must provide? Of course, when I asked that question, I was accused of changing the subject because I did not want to play along with the narrow ideology that was trying to be imposed on the conversation that began over England having a strong desire by a group in England wanting to re-legalize private ownership of firearms in jolly old England, in the British Crown, because it seems that much to the chagrin of the naysayers, their crime rate has not dropped. They have the worst crime rate in all of Europe. Gun crime, they will remind you, is significantly reduced. But the incidence of stabbings and clubbings has greatly elevated. And so began this dance of from whence does the authority, what gives a right? We all agree or accept that we are endowed with specific rights that are unalienable, meaning we don't have the authority within ourselves to sign them away. That doesn't mean that we don't sign them away. It doesn't mean that we don't neglect those rights. Simply means that no one, no other human being, including ourselves, has the authority to sign away those rights or to strip them away. So where does this arise from? You see, because being an atheist, he certainly cannot accept that this authority, these rights, are bestowed by God, a higher authority than man. So in the atheist worldview, the only way you achieve a higher authority than man is to get a group of men together, a collective, call them a government, write down these rules on a piece of paper, and voila, they are magically transformed by this act into something superior to the individual. Well, this is exactly, ladies and gentlemen, the thought process that has brought us to our current state. And I really would like to get other people's input rather than just my own as far as the thought process on rights, because I hold the belief that while we can talk philosophically about these rights that are endowed upon us by our Creator God, and I don't doubt for a moment that they are. In practical application, whether you want to talk about the law or government or the reality of practical application in day-to-day life, what we know to be true is that might trumps right. That is, people get confused between the ability to do something and the right to do something. I am fully capable of killing another human being for nothing more than my own personal enjoyment if I should decide to do so. What is it that stops me from doing that? Is it a law? Is it some secret magic words written on a piece of paper? Of course not. Is it the terrible thought that I might be found out and I could lose my life also? Well, you know, that might be a deterrent. Then again, it might not. Perhaps it's simply because I recognize that others have the same right to live that I do. And while I might have the ability to shoot my neighbor or cut his throat or beat him to death with a club, he may have that ability, or his son might have that ability, to do to me or my wife or my children. And you see, somehow out of this mutual respect arises the idea of a collective and a majority rule. Well, what if the majority is wrong? Slavery, perfect example. I think we can all agree that slavery was horrible. There is no way that anyone that I know today or yesterday or 10 years ago would agree that it's right, moral, and just to own another human being as property for any purpose. And yet that's exactly, precisely what the law said was permissible. Even in the scripture, in the Bible, slavery was permissible. Now, I'm not going to call into question the judgment of God, but I will call into question the judgment of man. And my friend that wanted to argue rather than debate on the merits failed to reason that no matter how you try to separate the individual from government, it's not possible. If it is, I would like to know how that's accomplished. Because as far as I'm aware, aside from those laws which are self-evident, which occur whether we recognize them, record them, write them down, and acknowledge them or not, aside from those few simple precepts, all law comes from man. It comes from the minds of men, and it's what has been referred to over the centuries as philosophy, which is really just another way of saying a way of thinking. It's an attempt to categorize how people think. And when we begin to do that, we start to branch off into labels. Collectivist, liberal, Democrat, progressive, conservative, Republican, libertarian, racist, anarchist. The list is endless. We have literally created millions of terms to identify, categorize, and group trains of thought. And how crazy and inaccurate are many of these labels? We all use them. I'm guilty as charged. Won't deny it. It's almost inescapable because we've been indoctrinated into this philosophy our entire lives. So much so that there are those people out there that give more reverence to the law simply because it's written down and agreed upon by many. They deify the law itself. And, you know, I pointed out to the gentleman that just as in biblical times, it's no different than today. The law, sir, will not save you. The law is not your salvation. It is, in fact, your damnation. God told Moses to take the law and put it next to the ark to testify as a witness against the Israelites. The law was going to give testimony as a witness against them, to convict them of their guiltiness, of their sins, of their transgressions, both against God and against their neighbors. And yet, we have these folks today that cling to the law as if it is some sort of salvation. Every tyrant that has ever walked the earth has used the law as his weapon, his justification. 61 million people died in World War II. And it was all done by the book, depending on whose book you were reading, whether it was the Germans' law or whether it was the English law or the French law or the Russian law or the U.S. law. We all have our laws now, don't we? And they don't all agree. And when one nation's laws are at odds with another nation's laws, well, you know, it can really start a conflict that turns into all-out war. And it really, simply for me, comes down to the fact that they're overlooking the individual entirely. It is, after all, human nature. It's what we do. It's possible that I'm wrong, but I can't see how. The law that we write on a piece of paper comes from the mind of men. And I'm not talking about the law, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery. Those aren't the laws I'm talking about. I'm talking about you can't carry an ice cream cone in your back pocket on a Sunday. You can't own specific types of firearms. You can't possess a knife
at a post office, or in Germany, or you can't own a handgun in the United Kingdom. Those are the constructs of men. And I would say all of those laws that seek to disarm the public are the work of cowards. They want to remove the threat of the citizenry. They want to quell the opportunity for the society they seek to control to rise up against them and to overthrow them when they become too onerous, when they become too cumbersome, when they become slave masters. They want to make it impossible for the average citizen to fight back. They want to own you. They make all kinds of excuses and justifications and rationalizations for these laws, and every single one of them rings hollow. If merely writing words on a piece of paper and calling them law could stop crime, could save a life, then the law of the Israelites, the law handed down to Moses, would have been sufficient. Christ would not have been necessary. The law would have been sufficient. I think that's one of the things that really rubs these atheists, is that they're perfectly willing and cheerfully so to submit to the authority of another. I'm sorry. I don't see me living my life that way. I will admit, as we all do, I'm sure, we submit many times out of expediency, because we know that, at least on the surface, the struggle is not worth the meager return. Some things just aren't worth fighting over. Some things are. And only the individual can draw that line of distinction for himself. I can't draw it for you any more than you can draw it for me. The founders, the framers, they drew that line, and they risked everything. Make no mistake, it was not lightly undertaken. This wasn't an arm wrestling contest or a caber tossing competition to determine the victor. It was war. People died. Families were destroyed, wiped out. People lost all of their possessions, were left homeless, penniless, wrecked, sometimes just flat dead. We have to decide when enough is enough. I have people, you know, and this is one of those practices that really irks me quite well. Oh, yeah. Well, why don't you name for me? Just write them down. What rights have you lost, and how did you lose them? What rights did you lose? What did Congress do that caused you to lose these rights? Just write them down for me and post them up when you lost them and what happened. As if it were that simply cut and dried. I don't need to be told that a snake is a snake. And I know human nature. As I've said many times, I don't trust myself, much less someone else. What do you suppose Mr. Franklin meant when he said, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it"? Or Jefferson, when he opined that the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants alike. We know that men are not angels, and in particular those that have been placed in positions of power and authority, or at least where they believe they have power and authority. I don't know if you guys saw this article this afternoon where the Arizona Republican Party has censured John McCain. Anybody see that headline? I thought it was fantastic. The Arizona Republican Party has censured John McCain for not being conservative enough, for having a piss-poor liberal voting record, and my God, why have we not seen more of this from around the country? I know we've got a couple right here in the state of Georgia in Saxby Chambliss and Johnny Isaacson who should also be censured because they are not upholding the very foundational principles upon which the state Republican Party in the state of Georgia claims to rest upon. We have on the line with us Miss Linda. How are you, Miss Linda?
Hi, Ron. Good to be with you here today. You touched on some really good things, and I would imagine that some of the libtards or the atheists / you know, whatever the labels we have, were driving you crazy. It is exhausting sometimes. I mean, it's funny because when you talk about self-evident truth, and our pastor was talking a little bit about that we all love to seek the truth, and if you don't even know where to find it, you're going to be at a loss because all you have to do is keep your eye on Jesus. And you go into that word yourself, and you've got it. It's there. If you, you know, don't want to go that path, then you can remain ignorant or on the outside of truth. You know, you'll be subject to everything out that's out there. And I think that's what's happening and has happened throughout history when we look at historical events, the oppression of others. I mean, from the beginning, so... because they couldn't even keep one commandment. That's why Moses was screaming.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I believe I hear you to be saying, Linda, is that the downfall of man in all of these various scenarios that you're giving is the fact that we've been willing to compromise away what we say we believe in.
Right.
You see, it's compromise. And, you know, one of the things that I had a public official tell me when I was lobbying down at the state capitol is we've got to find a compromise. And that made me, that Jeff just really frosted my Cheerios, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I thought, compromise? We're talking about my rights here, lady.
Yeah, there aren't any. Yeah.
What part of this do you not comprehend? And who in the hell granted you the authority to compromise my right to privacy, my right to property? Where from does this authority flow into your feeble hands?
Oh, man, I know. It just makes you livid. Well, when you talk about, you also talked about our country now, and we can always go back, and like you said, every tyrant that's ever walked the earth has done this. And, of course, they when they oppress, they first have to take away the ability to defend yourself, which makes them cowards because it's very simple. Well, of course, the Gestapo were cowards. My God, you know, they're the only ones with guns, right? So somebody's got a yellow star on them, and they're half-starved to death anyway, and they make them go onto the boxcars, you know, after they lie to them.
And that was such an egomaniacal,
horrible
sickening thing. And you know what? The poor Jews, they compromised and they went along to get along, and it cost millions of them their lives.
I get it, but
it reminds me of one of my favorite interviews with one of my least favorite talk show hosts ever, and that is the 5-minute clip of Milton Friedman on the Phil Donahue Show.
Yes.
When he asks him point blank,
mm-hmm.
is there a system on earth that doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, the other guy's greedy, but we're never greedy. It's not us that's greedy. It's always the other guy. But, I mean, if greed, if you're talking about operating under your own self-interest, name me a society on the face of the earth that doesn't operate on greed.
Well,
does the Soviet Union not run on greed?
Right.
Does China not run on greed? Does the United States of America not run on greed? Of course it does. Everybody is out for their own self-interests. That just seems to be so obviously self-evident. And this is where some folks try to camouflage their own self-interests by foisting them off as helping the little guy. We're going to help the poor. We're going to help the blacks. We're going to help the crack addicts. We're going to help single moms. We're going to help women. We're going to help abortions. It's all to help you because you can't help yourself. They gain nothing from it. It's not a compromise. Don't you worry. Don't you fret. We're here to help you. Horse crap.
Well, yeah, because if you have to still go back to the premise that, first of all, God created the heavens and the earth. Well, that's biblical. And the atheists are going to balk at that. So, I mean, somebody else said something really cool. I can't remember if it was on your show or you or someone else that was really pretty smart, said that those who actually say to you, I don't believe that God exists, when you think about that philosophy, that's one hell of a leap of faith on their part, wouldn't you say? That they can do this all on the...
I don't think it's a leap of faith. I think it's a lie.
Well, yeah, to themselves.
I think it's a... They're lying to you, they're lying to themselves, and they're lying to God.
Well, yeah, I think they're completely convincing themselves of this lie. You know, let's go back to we hold these truths to be self-evident. When you say that each one of these individuals has these unalienable, which means you can't touch them, I should get that from, remember the old Hammer Time? Can't touch this.
Yeah.
I need to get that track and do that on the right to life, meaning that if a bear is in a cave and he wants to protect his own life from you or protect the cubs from you, that's self-evident from God that that bear has this, that right, and so do you. You are a living creature of God. So that's where that came from. These people were not stupid. It's pretty basic. So, and when you, you know, when you think about it, that has, that that all this, these factions, all this division, all these labels, we're all guilty of doing the same fascistic stuff to each other by doing this that we don't want done to us. We just got to step back and take a look at that. You've got to be more libertarian in your thinking.
Well, it's the old, I forget what rule they call it. It's not the golden rule, obviously, but it's do unto others before they can do to you.
Well, true. And the word self-interest, when you talk about self-interest, that actually comes from, a lot of that comes from the theory of the von Mises or the Ayn Rand Center, where free markets and true capitalism, in the classic sense, not what we have today, of course, but everybody has their own self-interest.
Well, and you know,
little kids get it because to their credit, because they know that their survival depends upon it. If that earth doesn't revolve around them and the sun doesn't revolve around them, they'll die. I mean, they know instinctively that they need everyone to take care of them. So that is a self-interest thing. We're born with this. You have to be self-interested in feeding yourself. That's what I'm talking about, and that's where this stems from. It's fine to help someone else and get the loaves and fishes out there and help your neighbors, but why do we need the middleman, and why is it there's an abdication of responsibility on a wholesale level I've never seen before?
Well, yeah, and you're right, and the whole idea of self-interest, and I did a show on this a while back, because there were a couple of ladies on another BTR channel, and I got into it with them, and I said, whoa, you know, people get off on this whole thing trying to demonize an inanimate object like money. Oh, it's all money. It's money is the root of all evil. And it's like, no. The love of money.
The lust.
Is the root of all
the
evil.
Pure idolatry of it.
So, again, it's not the money. It's like a gun. A gun doesn't shoot anyone. Money doesn't control you. You either control it or you allow yourself to be controlled by your lust for it, one or the other.
Right.
I mean, you know, but again, it's all human nature. We are supposed to be in control of our own faculties. We all have choices that we make every day, and we have to live by those choices. And when we talk about self-interest, imagine for just a moment a world where everyone was only wholeheartedly, 100% selfishly concerned with their own self-interest and nobody else. You wouldn't be looking to waste your time and energy doing something that was not fruitful and didn't bring you a reward.
Right.
You wouldn't have time to worry about what the hell your neighbor was doing, right?
Well,
unless they were encroaching on your stash or whatever it was you were doing, and they posed a threat to you, then you would notice them.
Right. Well, okay, but I see where that's going. I understand, because you don't want people meddling and you don't want people taking the worrying about the beam in your own eye and the speck.
Right. And the fact of the matter is those relationships, because, you know, again, man is not an island unto himself.
Right.
No single person can be and do everything. I can't make shoes, you know. I can't build a house. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that I would need to rely on someone else's skill and ability.
Sure.
It's a natural gift. And so that self-interest, by remaining a self-interest, becomes a mutually beneficial relationship when we run into someone else who has the ability to create something that we can't.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So, but then what about the camaraderie when we, you know, when we're done with the toiling? Because we are kind of like little pack animals in some senses, since we're not an island and we like to hang out with
others. Absolutely. That's the whole social order of things, and that's where things begin to break down and fall apart, in my humble opinion, Because what? Seriously, you get two people together, and they have similar interests, and it's a mutually beneficial relationship, and they grow to a bond with one another, and they really care for one another. Now, multiply that by two more, and then bring in three more and four mm-hmm. more, and pretty soon you've got this little collective, and sooner or later, there's going to be something that occurs that offends someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to start to divide up in your little group, those who are offended or side with the offended
right.
party and want
like
to do
tribes.
Something about it, or those that side with the offending party. And then pretty soon, well, we're going to have to come to some kind of a compromise here.
Or conflict.
And we have just created our government. I mean, seriously, it's really, truly just that simple and base. And, you know, government, as big as it is today, is no damn different. It sprang from those very same interaction mm-hmm. of individuals. That's all the hell it is. Government is nothing more than a construct of the mind of men. We conjure it up. It's a way of our dealing
right.
with or letting someone else deal with the squabbles while we
okay.
go out and pursue our own interests. And in
right.
that sense, government is a, quote, necessary evil. It's when government begins to turn against our own self-interest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they
that
are.
We notice it, see, and then we're like, whoa, wait a minute. Hey, hang on.
And we need to
poke
squash
you in
it.
The eye there,
we need
buddy.
To get rid of it. Yeah, we need to stop it. We cannot compromise and roll over. We've said it before, you know, and people do because they acquiesce on every level, you know.
And,
like
and
the
we
only,
cannot.
The only reason, in California, the only reason I wear my seatbelt is because the fines have gotten so exorbitant, I'd be in so much trouble.
Well, and
I would not be able to buy food.
We cannot blame government, and we cannot blame those people that work for government because we encouraged the level of
mm-hmm.
encroachment that we currently have by our apathy or our consent, by our willingness to go along all the other times, all the other little tiny baby
yep.
steps. You know,
yep.
and it's a long process. It's not something that just happens
yes.
overnight. You don't
no.
wake up in the morning and suddenly Congress has got a constitutional amendment to eradicate the Second Amendment. No, it doesn't work that way. It's very long, drawn-out process, changing
very
people's
insidious.
Perceptions
yep.
and what they will accept as definitions of
mm-hmm.
words. And before you know it, the law has transformed before your very eyes, and up is down and down is up. I mean,
yeah.
it's just...
There was this one guy, and I don't have his name because I didn't write it down, but it was on Glenn's show today, and he's in all kinds of hot water because he said there's another Kristallnacht coming because of the demonization of the rich. And you know what? He might be right. Boy, did he get in the hot water. But... because they are demonizing it, and what Milton Friedman said to that idiot Phil Donahue is correct. And what people don't get with the Austrian theory is self-interest, okay, let's just say you want to do the hot dog stand or the hamburger stand or whatever. People don't get the fact that all these liberals and all these progressives and all these, you know, feel-good, kumbaya clowns, you know, with their war on women and God knows what else, they don't understand that people go into business for one purpose, usually, and that is to make a profit. They don't go into business to hire people.
Well, and,
now,
and I would...
as a result
I would...
of the business, it look, it could go into that if when the poor guy has to have three or four cart stands and more people to help him so he can find time to sleep, then that's a side benefit of true capitalism.
I would change the terms, and I agree.
Okay.
But because profit has been such a bastardized word, the reason that people go into business is
okay.
so that they can earn a living.
Right. Right.
And typically, because they want to earn a living doing something they love and enjoy,
sure.
or doing something that brings enjoyment to others. They see a need. that isn't being mm-hmm. fulfilled within the marketplace,
right.
and they have an idea that will fulfill sure. that need. It's really simple. My wife sells Harley-Davidson motorcycles. She's a general manager at a Harley dealership.
Mm-hmm.
She loves her job. And the reason she loves her job is because people are so happy to mm-hmm. come see her. It's not like an automobile, where an automobile today is pretty much a necessity.
Sure.
A motorcycle is a luxury. It's not something that you have to buy. I got to go buy a new motorcycle. No, they want to buy one. It's like buying
yeah.
a boat or a jet ski. Okay, it's mm-hmm. something you want for you, and it's for enjoyment. It's for life, to live
fun
your
things,
life
yeah.
and have fun and enjoy things. and I think that's a distinction that gets lost, and everyone mm-hmm. just sees business as evil. They're just evil corporations. Well, that's not true.
Not all
some
of them.
The corporation in and of itself is not a thing. It's not a living entity.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a government. It is a construct
right.
of the mind. It exists
sure.
on paper, but truly, it's just a collection of people.
Right.
And
yeah.
sometimes the board of directors, the stockholders, they can become more powerful than the owner of the company, the guy that started it, and take that
mm-hmm.
company in a direction that was never the intent of the owner,
right.
and do things that the owner would never have done, would never agree with, would roll in his grave if he knew this was being
mm-hmm.
done under his name. It's easy to demonize corporations. And I see we've got, I believe, Mr. Robert on the line with us.
Mr. Ron.
Mr. Robert.
Hey, Robert.
How are you?
What's going on? Hey, Linda. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Gosh, Ron, that was great. Self-interest. I like that.
That was a good monologue. That was really good.
It was a great monologue. And I'll give you a prime example of what I've been going through. You know, I have a pool, right? And I hire a pool cleaning service to clean my pool.
Oh, a pool? Okay, not a pole. You're not talking about a Pollock up around northern Illinois or anything. Gotcha.
Not a Pollock, no. So this guy, I mean, he's been coming to my house for 10 years. And, you know, his company is going out of business because of the highway going through, you know. So he's starting his own business. And I said, that's great. I said, I'll use you. I'll be glad to use you. No problem, you know. Then all of a sudden, this boy that's been coming to my house for 10 years tries to hit me up for $5,000 to start his business. I said, well, I don't have that kind of money. You know I don't have that kind of money. And I said, if I loaned you the money for the business, I said, I did it. Use your example. Can I work for you, so you can pay me off, right? No. I just need the $5,000. I said to myself, this guy is, this guy is taking me.
Yeah.
So sure enough. I wrote a letter. I said, please don't send anybody out on the 21st, so I won't be home. And I gave them 2 weeks' notice. I'm canceling their services because they were going out of business. And, you know, they sent him out anyways. Well, I was gone. I was doing something. I wasn't here when he played the pool. My Leonie was here. She said he's in school. She made an excuse for me. He says, "Well, I'll let you know I'm starting my business next week." Well, he's supposed to if he comes tomorrow, I say, "You know, Wes, I don't need anybody. I'm doing my own pool. I don't need to spend $85 a month anymore. You know, do it myself. I watched you long enough to know what to do." plus Kathy's father has his own pool company, and I'm set with the pool pump. I don't need it. But be it as it may, this guy was going to try to take me for $5,000. And that's something.
Well, you know, Robert, you should have looked at him and said, "You know, I'm Jewish, right?"
Well, you know what the
you got a better chance to ham sandwich, buddy.
You know what the, hey Rob, do you know what the difference between a Jew and a canoe?
Boy, I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
A canoe knows how to tip.
I definitely have gotten room for that one.
Okay, yep. I made you laugh. I could use that then, right? I could use that one.
Absolutely, that's a good one. I am being told that I have to get you to set aside some time for July to come to Delaney this year.
Yes.
I'll try.
We're not going to take "I'll try" for an answer this time.
Oh, come on.
Well,
even a couple days.
It depends on what happens. There's a lot going on. You know, I just did a bear of a job here. I got new windows finally, and let me tell you something, guys. I was basically living homeless in the wintertime. When they took out the windows, it was warmer in my house when the windows were out than when they were in.
Yikes.
It was unbelievable. My health is... I'm almost 100% right now. I've been sick for a long time, guys.
And Robert, down in your neck of the woods, I see that Justin Bieber has been arrested for drag racing.
He's that Justin Bieber, you know.
I know it's dangerous, but I didn't know they had a law against running in high heels down there.
Well, yes, they do.
You know the bad thing about transvestites, right? They're harder to beat up than regular women.
Oh, God, they're bad. You can get arrested for saying
really bad.
The radio show, Ron. You better cut that foul now.
No, Robert, you got to come. See, we're going to do this thing for a whole week. So you can pick your days to come.
Okay, the whole week.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I just want to let you guys know that I passed the government in order to study for my exam. I had to take a government. I had to take a government to fingerprint. I had a government to fingerprint. I passed. I've cleared no light. I could run for office now.
Oh God. Well,
I don't
do it.
I don't have a crew. I'm cleaner than Snow White.
So Ron, what do you have you predicted what the Schmendrick in Chief is going to say tomorrow night?
Schmendrick.
Oh, yeah. You know, jobs.
Oh, I think I heard a little bit on Hannity today because somebody leaked some stuff to him that the talking points were going to be. And as I know, it's going to be income inequality. It's going to be, you know, we got to move forward. But the only problem is he never says how, except for tax and spend, of course. He calls the taxing investing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just that. Oh my
you know,
God.
I wanted to throw this out there because I don't know if anyone else got this email from the Project to Restore America. That it was an article titled "It's Time to Eliminate the U.S. Corporate Income Tax," and I just find it very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually talks about, you know, gives an example of a 34% retail sales tax and how it diminishes your purchasing power, which is true. And then it goes on to explain the gains from eliminating the corporate tax. I just, you know, I think before we eliminate the corporate tax,
mm-hmm.
I think we should look at eliminating the individual tax. And I'll tell you why. Because either one, okay, we already know directly affects the individual and not so much the corporation. Now, there are some intricate things in the corporate tax that creates some hazards, if you will. But on the individual income tax end of things, if we look at it realistically, we've only got about half of the damn country paying any individual income tax to begin with, 49%. And we've already covered the numbers of those that actually are paying a net income tax versus mm-hmm. just using recycled tax money to pay taxes back. So, you know, we're getting down to what the 18-20% of the people are footing the bill for everyone
else.
Yeah,
it's pretty – well, there's not too many people actually working.
through the guise of the income tax. So I think that what that would do would be to reward those people that are working. And you know what happens when you actually let someone keep more of their tax money, more of their paycheck, I should say.
Of their actual money that's theirs.
Right. What we earned, we already saw that previously when Obama, through executive orders, lowered the Social Security tax rate by 4%. Mm-hmm. People had a little bit more money in their pay, and what'd they do? They spent it, didn't they? And when people go out and spend money, it creates demand and jobs, and it's called an economy.
Is that the supply and demand curve that
That's
I was learning
funny.
From Hillsdale?
Well, you know, it really is part of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it goes back to my atheist friend who wants to somehow differentiate between government and the individual, the collective and the individual. How do you do that? How do you differentiate between the individual and the economy? There's no way to do that because the economy, the government, society, everything that mm-hmm. is, as far as human beings are concerned, is made up of individuals.
Right.
And so instead of
the individuals who are working make up the government, period. Right?
Well, we're the ones that pay for those that stay home on their butts and collect government benefits at this point.
Sure.
I don't know that I would say that most of the folks that comprise government are actually working. Now, there are government workers.
Don't.
That's a pretty good gig, too. But, I mean, without chasing down a rabbit hole, the point is that we should be directing all of our rewards and accolades towards those people that are actually productive members of society that produce added value to the equation.
Sure.
That
exactly.
is a reward in and of itself. That is, my God, the reason we work to begin with, is it not? It's kind of like going into business.
Yep. Well,
you know?
On that note, when people confuse language, and they love to rewrite history, rewrite everything, rewrite meanings, you know, change the dictionary to further their cause. It's like having a young kid of 10 or 12 looking at some clown like Justin Bieber or whatever his name is, or Miley Cyrus or any of these clowns. And what these kids do is they totally confuse the word fame with heroism. There's no concept of what real heroism is. So hopefully that can be corrected by a few people writing about the old days, or like Amelia Earhart or anybody like that, and try to explain to the children and relate to them by saying, well, when that person was your age, they did this in their backyard. That's how they started, you know, because kids can't – all they see is this adult that's already dead. They don't relate to that at all. But, it's understanding that the concept of individual responsibility, freedom, and sovereignty, people just don't get that. And, yeah, we are a group, but I don't like that word collective because that brings up Stalin. So,
well, and that's why I use it. And quite honestly, we are a group, but we're not a collective.
Well, yeah, because that is Marxism. I know what that is. That's total redistribution.
Well, and the thing is, we're not all, you know, drones. We all have our own ideas and our own philosophies
sure.
on things. We don't agree on every single thing. And thank God we don't, because it would really be freaking boring if we did.
Boring.
And
yeah.
One of my favorite things to do is argue. And if I don't have anybody to argue with, I'd really feel left out.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm going to head back to the chat room because I have to start cooking my MetaFast meal. So thank you so much. And, Robert, you've got to come to Delaney, dude. So getting that
yes,
set up.
And I got Doc in the chat room. He said that's not a bad drive for him. Gosh,
ooh,
if he's
great.
Up by Michael Magic, he can
thought.
Bring Mr. Mike with him, too.
Absolutely.
Doc's always doing good. Or if he's not, he's never complained.
See you guys
how's
later.
Michael Magic, how's Michael Magic doing?
I've not heard an update on Michael since the last one. I heard that, you know, he's doing well and recovering. But, of course, because of the situation, it'll take him a little while longer than most to do so. But in good spirits and recovering. So that's a positive thing.
Wow. I still... What I got to do with Frank, I got to call the his supervisor again and try to get him to call me.
I have tried to get a hold of his daughter with no success. So I don't know.
Do you remember the daughter's last name?
Oh, God, I don't. Robert. I've got her information on the Patriot Families, but I honestly don't remember it.
I can't remember either. I don't know where I wrote it down. I don't know, and I've been trying to find it, and I can't find it. I know I wrote I wrote her number down somewhere, but I can't find it. My house, Ron, is just... It's just like a normal house now. It's solid. It's so quiet. It's unbelievable.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm reading some of the jokes on a thread on my website. I shouldn't be doing that, but it was the title of the joke thread is "I'm going to hell for this joke."
I'm going to hell for this joke.
Yeah, guy That's says, I was talking to a Jewish guy the other day and told him my grandfather died in a concentration camp. He looked at me with tears in his eyes and said, "That's terrible." I said, "Not really. He fell off the guard tower."
Oh, my Lord. That's pretty bad. That's an awful joke. Oh, man. That is horrible. Geez, Rob. Do you think we're gonna hear I'm sorry, Mr. Albert? Do you think he's gonna apologize?
Not a snowball's chance in Hades. I don't think that man has ever apologized for a damn thing in his life. The narcissistic side of him won't allow it.
I hope I receive a check for the government to cover my health care expenses so I can afford Obamacare.
Well, you know, if you sign up for school, it'll be mandatory. You can get a government loan, and they'll cover the whole thing and send you a subsidy.
No, they won't. Not after that law. You're going to have to have Obamacare in order to take classes. Those students ain't going to pay for that. They're not going back to school. They couldn't care less if they graduated or not. Now, they don't care now. They're really ticked off. They're not going to do it. They just won't do it, Ron. It's just, I don't know. I still don't know what to do. But you know what sounds really attractive that I've done a lot of research there, Ron, and which I think everybody in the chat room should think about this, is start doing a health savings account. And with the beauty of the health savings, I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just telling you what I've been researching. And the beauty of a health savings account is let's say your deductible is $3,000 to $6,000. Well, you put the $6,000 in to start, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the $6,000 to start is what you're going to use for your visits. But the beauty.
So you're prepaying your deductible is what you're doing.
Exactly, but it's tax free, and you're making interest on it at the same time.
Well, I think, and Doc put a thing in the chat room that Obamacare is doing away with the health savings accounts over time, and I believe that to be accurate. And I also know that what some of the insurance companies are doing with the health savings accounts now is that any money that's left over in that account at the end of the year, you're not able to roll over to the following year. You lose it. So in other words, whatever money you spend in there, put into the health savings account, if you do not spend that money in the calendar year, come the end of the year, you lose that money. They get it. And so at that point, I mean, you know, it's tomato, tomato. To me, the whole health savings account, I understand the concept of it, and it's great that it's tax-free. So you get a little break, but what is the break? A 15% discount over what you would have gotten hosed? If you paid cash, you're going to get a 25 to 35% discount, and screw the tax break is the way I look at it.
So you're just
go to my doctor and say, hey, doc, look, you know, I got cash. I don't need a receipt. You need this procedure? Great. What would it cost, cash? If I'm just paying cash and don't need a receipt for it, we're not writing this off. What, you know, I know many people that have done that.
I don't know what to do yet, Ron. I'm still in limbo.
And I know that the Chamber of Commerce is pushing pretty hard on a few new things. Here in Georgia, they've got a new law that they're trying to get pushed through that the medical trial lawyers absolutely do not like at all, not even close. They are raising hell about it. What they want to do is to, you know, these trial lawyers where, you know, we'll turn your crash into cash and that kind of crap, what my old buddy Phil used to call the ambulance chasers. But basically what they want to do is they want to pool all of these injury cases and medical malpractice. They want to pool that into the same system and handle it just like a workman's compensation claim is handled.
Oh, my Lord.
So that you have an administrative law judge, and the two sides come in and they present their case, and the judge looks at it under the rules of the law. You know what? I like the idea. It's not what I would call tort reform, but I guarantee you the doctors in the state of Georgia would be doing handstands for something like this because it would eliminate the frivolous lawsuits that come to bear through medical malpractice. Not that all medical malpractice suits are frivolous, of course, but it would set up an arbitration with an administrative law judge, and it would really change the course of medical malpractice in the state.
Let me ask you a question, Ron.
Yeah.
So what's your congressman up around Georgia? What's the deal with him?
Which one? Which one?
The one up in Rome, Georgia.
In Rome, Georgia.
Yeah, he's fighting Obamacare really bad, and he was telling his constituents, you might as well not even watch the news for a year because you don't know what we're going to do. Do you recall that statement?
No, I'm not sure which one that is. I mean, there's so many to keep track of, but that sounds like a good idea to me. I don't watch the news now, so.
I don't either. I just turn it off. I can't stand them anymore. It's like a broken record. It's just like a broken record. At speed 57.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Miola in here said he doesn't think he's ever had insurance. You know, back in the day, that was unheard of for someone to have medical insurance. Right up until the time. You know, who do we have to thank for that? But Richard Milhouse Nixon and that frickin' Kaiser deal back in the 70s, right?
Right, but I never had health insurance.
There was nothing wrong with our medical health care system back in the 60s and the 70s. There wasn't a damn thing wrong with it. From an insurance company's point of view, the thing that was wrong with it is they didn't have a big enough slice of the pie.
That's right.
And Obamacare ensures a 100% slice of the pie.
But the reason my father made me buy that plan... He made me buy it in 94. I never had health insurance until 1994. And the only reason he made me buy that plan is because I have a hypothyroid. I had thyroid disease.
And, absolutely. You know,
if I don't take my Synthroid, I die, period. I'll just die.
Well,
you know?
and you're someone that maybe, and I'm going to say maybe, benefits from having insurance. But here again, you can rest assured that whoever the insurance company is that wrote your policy, they have not lost any money on what you pay them.
No. You're right. They haven't. I told you what I pay for Lisa for the past 7 years.
So why would it not have made sense for you to stockpile cash, right, and invest, a wise investment, something that's going to... I mean, why is it that the average person cannot do what an insurance company does, which is take that money and put it into an amateurized investment schedule so they know how much return they need to get on their investment for a worst-case scenario payout? I mean...
Well, I understand. Now they have this new annuity coming out, and I have to call them to find out about it. But it's an anti-annuity. It is liquid money. It's an annuity that you can invest tax-free and take out with no penalty at a certain tax rate. But I don't know what that rate is.
Well, I would have to see what you're talking about, because it sounds like, or it sounds reminiscent of, what's called a dividend paying whole life policy.
Exactly.
Okay, but the problem that you're going to run into is your age. You know, at 50 years old, for me to get a dividend paying whole life policy that's going to have a $250,000 payout in the event of my death, Louise, it's going to cost me $3,000-$4,000 a month.
I know. Don't you wish we should have bought life insurance when we were early?
Well, you know, I wish to God I'd have known way back when what I know now. Had I known when I got my settlement, when I broke my back, had I known then what I know now, I know exactly what I would have done with that money, and I can tell you that right now I would not be working, nor would my wife unless she just wanted to. Neither one of us would be working, but I didn't know those things. But I can do it for my grandchildren today, and that is to get them into a dividend-paying whole life policy. And what that does is, and you have to have someone that knows what they're doing. It has to be structured properly so that you benefit and not the insurance company. But basically what it does is you put the money into the policy, and you pay into the policy for 4 years or 7 years, depending on how the policy is structured. And after that time, the investment return from the policy pays for itself. So the policy investment return pays the premium every year or every month.
That's called
it's a dividend-paying whole life policy.
Okay.
So what happens is 3 years, 4 years, or 7 years into the policy is self-sustaining. And after you reach that four-year, five-year, seven-year timeline, typically at about 10 years, you have a pretty large cash value accrued in that policy.
Right.
Which you can withdraw tax-free.
Tax-free.
And you're never taxed. You cannot be taxed on the growth, the true income of the policy, because it's the proceeds of an insurance policy.
Wow.
Now, in the very early stages of the policy, you know, if you're looking just at rate of return, it looks pretty meager. Mm-hmm. But you can rest assured that the insurance company, their actuaries have done all the homework for you, and they're going to invest that money so that they get a return that is sufficient to cover the cost of funding the policy and any payouts they may incur, plus a cushion. And it is that cushion that you're after.
What is the cushion that you're after?
Well, the cushion is the extra, and you can have the policy structured so that that extra is paid into the policy and not into the insurance company's bank account.
Oh, wow.
So basically the insurance company is acting as your personal private investor for your benefit.
And that's something. So what do we do at our ages, Ron? What do you think? I mean, if we had to invest into it, would you invest
Nieces, nephews, grandkids, you know, buy them a policy, and you're the holder of the policy.
They're the beneficiaries. They're the owners. Yeah.
Well, you're the owner of the policy, and, you know, they can name whoever they want as a beneficiary when they become 18 years age. But at that time, what that does is it's kind of like if you go online, you can find it. You'll hear guys talk about be your own banker. That's right. What they're talking about is using a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy. And so what you do is, you know, let's say, for instance, one of the policies that I'm looking at doing for one of my grandkids, after 5 years, there will be $35,000 accumulated cash value in the policy. Mm-hmm. Now, suppose Uncle Ron wants to go get a new car. Well, I got a couple of choices. I can go down and trade in my car and get a loan for the rest and pay, you know, 2% interest or whatever interest they want to charge for my new car loan. Or I can take that money out of the policy, go pay cash for the new car, treat it just like I would a loan, and pay that 2% interest to myself every month by repaying that loan back into the policy. And over the amount of time, 5 years or whatever it takes me to repay that car loan to the insurance policy, okay, I have paid myself the interest that I otherwise would have paid to the bank that's loaning me the money for the car.
That's a great
example. So I've accumulated my wealth, and by the way, it's tax-free.
That's the key.
When I take it back out, I can use it at any time, and it's tax-free.
Wow, Ron.
And as long as I don't completely wipe it out, I don't diminish the payout of the life insurance benefit?
So you could do a dividend whole life policy on your wife now.
Well, I can, right? But she's older than I am. She's pretty old.
No.
And so the premium would be much higher. If you're going to do it as a source of income and like something to fall back on and draw from if you should need to, then it would make more sense to do it where you can put in the maximum amount that you can stomach, but you don't have to. And there is a threshold there that you cannot cross, which is called a MEC line, which is a modified endowment, meaning that if you put more than a certain amount per year in that policy, it's no longer treated as an insurance policy. It's treated as an endowment. So you have to have someone helping you write this policy and set the policy up so that you stay very well within the guidelines of the law, so that you're not getting outside of that modified endowment line or crossing that line, which could cause you a great deal of grief tax-wise.
Man, we've got to protect ourselves now.
Well, it's what it's all about. It really is. And the beauty of it is, for me...
Not only do we have to prove, because we're not bulletproof anymore.
No, but the beauty of it to me is that, you know, I can do this with my grandchildren. And so I'll get the most bang for the buck. And as long as I leave those policies and I don't just like suck all the money out of them, you know, like an idiot, then that will roll over and it's something my children can utilize. And it will grow as they're, if they, because once the policy is, once you hit that 4 or 5 year line, the policy is paying the dividend or paying the premium on the policy for the life of the policy. It's never going away.
Right.
So you don't have to put any more money into it. It just keeps growing. Okay? You can put more money into it, but you got to be careful because by doing that, you can cross that modified endowment line. So, but you can always borrow money from it and then pay that money back. So it just gives you an extra source of liquid cash that's not taxable.
That's unbelievable.
It's a fantastic idea.
It is a fantastic idea.
The policies have been around for over 150 years. It's not something new.
No.
The insurance companies aren't out there trying to proselytize them because that's not where they make their money.
They make their money by protecting people.
They make their money by taking a cut of your premium. So that's where they make their money.
Well, the premiums are taxed.
They make their money by keeping that pad.
Did I tell you, Ron, that the $317 a month premium that I was paying into my health insurance every month, did I tell you that it was nothing but a tax? That's all it was a tax. I was paying a tax.
Absolutely.
That's what really pisses me off about the whole damn thing. And that got me so angry, Ron, that I saw stars.
Well, hopefully one of them wasn't Justin Bieber in drag racing.
Oh, you got a fetish for Justin Bieber.
Robert, I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And don't forget, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. right here, the Hoot and Holler Show. 7 p.m. Wednesday night for Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. And the good Lord willing, the creek don't rise. Thursday night, 6 p.m. right here for our very own Miss Terry Rowland in Patriot Education. Guys,
I got a hitter show.
God bless everybody. Have a great night and keep fighting.
That's all we can do.
God bless, Robert. Bye-bye.